Addict named Gerald from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Clean date is 7/22/1991. And I don't say that to brag or boast, because you didn't see the 10, 12 years that I was relapsing and coming in here and still trying to figure it out my way. And it didn't work, as you see. The topic that was told to me was the foundation, the foundational steps. That's what was told to me. But I got to tell you a little bit about me before I even go there. That's probably the last thing I do is go there. I've been at the same home group for 33 years. I'm still scared of the disease of addiction, because now I understand that it affects every area of my life, and I don't play with this. I don't have a lot to smile about. My heart has been hardened by a lot of things that went on to me when I was young. And one thing I understand about this fellowship is you come as you are, but you're gonna stay as you are if you stay here. And a lot of times I hear people talk about God. And what our literature talks about is having a God of your own understanding, long as it's loving, caring, and greater than yourself. I don't get into all the God things. That's not my thing. I'm here to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope, and the promise is freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that's all we have to give. Certain words you can't twist or interpret it any way you want to. It says the disease of addiction affects every area of our life. Now, you can't have no kind of interpretation on every. Every and all, they are particular words that mean just what they mean. And the one thing about the disease of addiction is out to do its job is to kill us in one way or another. And it'll start in a spiritual way, not the drug. The drugs is the last thing we pick up. But if I didn't get here and do the things that y'all were talking about doing, like getting a sponsor, getting a home group, getting involved in service, making sure I'm at my home group at least once a week, that I don't do the basics. They are the basics. And I heard before, after the 4.5 years I let go, before I stayed clean, that if you don't leave the basics, you ain't gotta go back. So I say these things, and when I share, I'm sharing about what I experienced and what I've been going through, because you may not, you know, your experience is your experience. How you feel about the God that you understand is totally and without any catches for you. I myself grew up in the church. I was molested in the church by men and women. A lot of other things happened in my life that hardened me up. Because listen, when I was going to church, I was getting high. And I was trying to find ways and means to get more. So the disease of addiction, I understand, manifests itself a long time before I got here. So when I got here and I got a sponsor, dumb as a rock, you know, I start buying books. And I said, well, I can cop. You know what I mean? I could get money to cop. So I'm copping books. I don't like to read. I don't like to write. But the guy said, if you read this stuff, it'll help save your life. And I needed some help. A lot of help. So when I got back, and I got a sponsor first, I got a support group, I got a home group, I start asking people questions. If you came up here and share something, I might ask you about it. And see, back there, I was pretty raw. See, back in the day, it was different than this nice recovery atmosphere that we have now. They would tell you stuff like, don't take it personal, just take it. Or show up and shut up. You don't want to come in here and tell us how to do something, show up and help. Or maybe you wanted to say, show up and be quiet. Real nice. I just got done doing that with somebody and I hurt the person's feelings. So now, you know, since I know the person's feelings hurt, I got to apologize. I got to do a 10 step. Somebody was talking about that, taking a personal inventory. Because one thing about the steps have made a transformation in my life. Because you can't go nowhere without the first one. You know, it's like, you know, when they build houses, most of the houses they build today, when they got basements, it's concrete. Or even if it ain't have a basement, it's concrete. That concrete becomes the foundation. And your foundation is only as strong as the concrete you putting in there. Because there's different kinds of concrete. And see, the thing about staying here is in order to stay here, the work has to be done. I cannot stagnate. I cannot stay clean and don't want to do the things that keep me outside of this. First step talks about being powerless over our addiction and our lives have become unmanageable. That's real easy to see when the unmanageability comes because I want to try to exert control over things that I ain't really got control over anyway. And we talk about things that we think we got control over, we out of control anyway. But if we don't pay attention, we don't get a sponsor to guide us, we'll just be doing the Milli Vanilli. Y'all know who Milli Vanilli was. Y'all know who Milli Vanilli was? A group that was singing that wasn't singing. So to come in here and spend some time with y'all, Harrisburg is about 2 hours away, hour and a half for some of us. I'm using in that area. I ain't gonna lie. And one thing about recovery, you know, I really like to thank y'all for having me up and this looked like a great turnout. Listen, when we have something, man, by 10:30, they gone, man. And it's okay. You know, it fizzles out. So for y'all to be here and just since I came, you know, and this ain't my first time coming up here, you know, but for y'all to be here and do the things that y'all been doing and enjoying the things the way y'all have been enjoying, that's beautiful. That's one of the parts of recovery. Just one. Because see, somebody had to be of service to do this. So the other 90% that ain't doing nothing but coming in and out, playing on your phones, and all that, you know what I do? I go by, you recovering on your phone. And I only do it to people that I know is open to, you know, that enjoyment, you know, because we can't tell you how to recover. I know I can't. They couldn't do it to me. It was jail time. It was facilities. It was walking on the street and spiritually dead. I heard somebody talking about that earlier. We don't talk about that much. That spiritual death that comes about when we can't get one more and we walk around in a state of mind trying to find ways and means. And the disease is ripping us a new butthole. But we still keep going. We still act like the Energizer Bunny till we get that next one. Then we get that moment of silence, right, that we carry it here. We get it out there, too. See, let me tell you something about disease of addiction. Disease of addiction got his own steps and traditions and concepts, too. You know that? He got his own. Oh, yeah. And he'll start quoting them. Yeah, we powerful. Yeah, we gonna come to believe. We making a decision. We inventory that. We share it. We look at the defects. We trying to find some more defects to put with the defects that we ain't working on in the first place. Sure. We make less. All that kind of stuff. So my thing is coming in here and entertaining, like I hear sometimes of people, you know, trying to tell you where stuff is. Well, show me, because I'm one of them guys that if I hear you say something, I'm hoping you can show me in the book. You know, I've been able to woosah in a lot of areas when it comes to recovery, because I hate hearing people quote stuff that ain't true. And the reason I say I know it ain't true, because I read so much. I carry books everywhere I go. I have books for my car, my truck, my house, my dining room. Why you think? Because I'm trying to help save my life. And I really mean that. Just for today, January 22nd, the School of Recovery. This is a program for learning. Learning and recovery is hard work. The things we most need to know are often the hardest to learn. We study recovery to prepare ourselves for the experiences life will give us. As we listen to others share in meetings, we take mental notes we can refer to later. To be prepared, we study our notes and literature between lessons. Just as students have the opportunity to apply their knowledge during tests, so do we have the opportunity to apply our recovery during times of crisis. As always, there's one of them words, always, we have a choice in how we will approach life's challenges. We can dread and avoid them as threats to our serenity, or we can gratefully accept them as opportunities to grow. By confirming the principles we've learned in recovery, life's challenges gives us increased strength. Without such challenges, however, we can forget what we've learned and begin to stagnate. These are the opportunities that prone us to new spiritual awakenings. We will find that there is often a period of rest after each crisis, giving us time to get accustomed to our new skills. Once we've reflected on our experience, we are called on to share our knowledge with someone who is studying what we've just learned. Now, I read all that, but this is the most important part. In the School of Recovery, all of us are teachers as well as students. See, it's sad sometimes when we don't see the equality that's supposed to be coming around here. First tradition talking about unity is a must. That means all of us. There is no big eyes or little U's. 12th tradition talks about principles before personalities. And once we see that stuff, even when we're doing a service, it puts a bad feeling on somebody that may not know what we know, and they leave and go out and get high. Now, we didn't make them go get high, but we didn't help the situation. That third tradition guards us and tells us that all you got to have is desire. All they got to have is desire to come in here and be as equal as anybody else. And guess what? They ain't even got to stop using drugs. I seen some people pick somebody up in a dance and carry them out the dance because the guy was drinking. And I looked at him, and sadly, I was, you know, had to say something at their next business meeting that they had for the activities committee, because the book tell you right in there, even a using addict is welcome. We're just trying to get you in the door. What you do when you get in here is up to you. The guys I sponsor, they know I don't chase you around and try to tell you what to do. It's your recovery. When life challenges come up, how do I handle them? Because I ain't perfect. I got some information. And after 33 years studying this the way I've been studying it, there it is, things that's in my mind that's repetitious and been repetitious because I've been trying to work the program to the best of my ability. Doing step work, not speedballing through the steps. Let me give you an example. You go to a restaurant, Rod, you're over there laughing. You go to a restaurant, right, and get a full-course meal. When you leave there, can you go get another full-course meal? That's the way the steps are. We got to give time to digest, to understand what we've just learned, to practice it and be aware of it so it can be something that we can use through the steps. My sponsor taught me how to line up all 12 steps in a situation. And when he did that, I said, someday I'm going to be able to do that. And the day has come. because I did the work that it takes. Told y'all I'm a literature guy. You know, there's times when people talk about us, the quoters, the book toters, all those kind of things. That stuff used to bother me. You know, I come from a reactive type of nature. That's all I did before I got into Narcotics Anonymous. Because it wasn't the dog in the fight, it was the fight in the dog. It didn't matter if I got beat up or not. It was the fight. Just like getting high, it's the fight. It's coming in here and saying, look, I'm tired. Because then we tell you tired is what tired does. And if you go back out and use, well, maybe you ain't scared of the disease of addiction like I am. I'm scared still. And it's a healthy fear that I have. Because if I put myself in a position where I'm not internally practicing what I need to practice, I can get high too. I told you relapse in my story. But I can't fool around with people, places, and things. Not even my own family. Not even my own kids. And I just had one son that got murdered in May. He just came home from 7 years in the penitentiary. Now, this guy and his crew, they did home invasions. Hell, I didn't even know about home invasions till these guys started doing them. They was doing a whole lot of things that people was trying to tell me about, and I wasn't trying to hear that. I said, I don't want to hear that. Whoa! I already know how my son is. He's still for me. So if he's still for me, he ain't got no problem stealing from you. He stole guns. He stole my wife's wedding rings. He stole his sister's clothes, sneakers. The very people that love him the most, he stole from. Then when he got out in the world, that was his M.O. Steal people's cars. They even know who he was. Stealing people's cars. They said, man stole my car, and he tore off the mirror. He said, I'm going to just come to you to get the money to fix it, or I'm going to call the cops. So what I do? I got the mirror fixed. You think I should have let him call the cops? I remember my mother and my dad calling the cops on me. That's how bad things got. They owned two bars. They had a son as an addict, and they went to work. And when they went to work, I went to those places and took what I wanted to take. What, you gonna stop me? Who gonna stop me? So I understand that this disease don't care. It don't care about how you dressed or how much money you got or how many cars you got or a house you got. It don't give a damn who your mom and your dad is, your uncle, your granddad. It don't matter. It wants you to get high, and it wants you to keep getting high till you run out of money, because it knows after you run out of money, you coming after somebody. Just does its job. So staying here with us and us sharing honestly, you know, because in the beginning, I told all kind of lies. Oh, yeah. Good lying ass in the beginning. But that wore off. The euphoria, that wore off. Because I heard men coming in the meetings talking about they was molested. So you weren't allowed to say that back in the hood or on the corner or anywhere for that matter. It didn't matter. Because you have a bullseye on your back. But I came in here to a fellowship that gave me freedom from active addiction by being able to come in here and freely say whatever's going on with me, and I know I'm going to get the help. I know I'm going to get the support from whoever. Race, creed, color, religion, lack of religion. Because I don't practice a particular religion, but I got many books, and pretty much they all tie in the same way. One God, many whatevers. But all we want to do is we want not to get high today. And then after we get high, we want to understand about the disease of addiction. Because, see, we ain't in no fellowship that says we just have a drug problem. We're in a fellowship that talks about the disease of addiction that affects every area of our life. And if you think there's one that don't affect, or you think that an ancient disease is you, keep coming back. Because it'll show you. It'll show you your damn self. The first paragraph of the 12th step says, we came to Narcotics Anonymous as a result of the wreckage of our past. The last thing we expected was an awakening of the spirit. We just wanted to stop hurting. Says the steps lead to an awakening of a spiritual nature. This awakening is evident by changes in our lives. These changes make us better able to live by spiritual principles and to carry our message of recovery and hope to the addict who still suffers. It didn't say to the newcomer. Let's not get this shit twisted. Excuse me, I might cuss a couple times, but that's an area I don't fool with neither. My friend of mine says a feeble mind trying to forcibly express itself. So I don't need to cuss. It says the still suffering addict. That's everybody in here. Whether you knew or not, whether you relapse. Because listen, after all that I've been going through this year, I'm telling you, son got murdered, wife been in a nursing home for the last 2 years, or I ain't even talking about her yet. The last 25 strokes, the last stroke took her eyesight, her speech, and being able to walk. And we run around acting like it's a privilege to be able to see, hear, and talk. Until we can't do it no more. It says, the message, however, is meaningless unless we live it. The message, however, is meaningless unless we live it. As we live it, our lives and actions give it more meaning than our words and literature ever could. So I just pick things out to teach, okay? You hear what the Just for Today said? We're all teachers as well as students. Well, y'all the students right now, and I'm the teacher. When I sit down and you share, you the teacher and I'm the student. Don't matter how much clean time I got. Clean time ain't no badge. And clean time don't equal recovery. But change time can mean something. If I tell you I got a couple months abstinence from using in the area of sex, when I ain't getting no sex from my wife, she's in a nursing home with 25 years, and then you have these good guru judging people that tell you, you shouldn't do nothing. You're married. You're supposed to obey till death do you part. Yeah, okay. You keep that for you. I ain't gonna say what I like. I'm a freak. How about that? I get the freedom to do that here without being judged by most of y'all. You know, we had a Joe's that judge don't matter and those that matter don't judge. That's the biggest bunch of bullshit I ever heard. Remember telling my sponsor that. He said, well, don't ever say that shit to me again. That was Skip, too. Listen, let me tell you something about being judgmental. The 12th tradition talks about what we hear in meetings, let it stay in meetings. But say your sponsee was in a meeting and he was talking about blowing somebody's brains out or blowing his own brains out. And I was the person that heard that and knowing you to go call you on the phone right after that meeting and say, yo, Your sponsor talking about taking his life. That's a positive way to use the 12th tradition. Now, if I'm just running around talking about, oh, that crazy, he talking about blowing his brains out, making it a, some kind of whatever, being negative with it, that's what it's about. Because, listen, I need to know and be judgmental about the, who the people I don't need to be around. Well, I know you stealing, I don't need to be around you. And I'm making a judgment call. Well, I know y'all over there in the back row looking for the having a lush posse, getting ready to make a citizen's arrest on them newcomer girls over there. Oh, I don't need that. Oh, no. We don't get in here and get dumbfounded about areas in our life that we suffer from. Because, listen, I'm going to have to suffer in silence with that. Some of us ain't got the balls to come in here and drop it like it's hot to get our own freedom. Because I'm still stuck on how you going to see me instead of how I'm feeling. So that's where the sponsor and the steps come in. I'm currently finishing up a fourth step. The steps ain't no joke. See, the steps are designed to make us go in to our lives in a way that nothing else could. Now, I know, listen, I worked in the facility for 14 years, but nothing can compare through all that, all them seminars and all them whatevers that I had to do, you know, and knowing medication, because now they dropping it like it's hot with medication, just want to put you on that shit so you they can make some money or they can keep your mind all messed up. Well, all you got to do is come in here with us. We the misfits. Come on in here with us. We crazy. Don't act like you ain't. You wouldn't be in there with me. You got help on your forehead just like mine being up in here. So I ain't in here to pacify nobody. I come from a sponsee family that just believes in those steps, and I believe in those steps because I got to a point where, listen, when it was, I was 50-something years old. I'm going 67. I was 50. I might have been 53, 54 when I was able to make amends to my mother. And when I did, because I'm light-skinned with a whole bunch of hair. My brothers is dark-skinned with no hair, and they younger than me. So all I had this nagging feeling in my spirit that this guy ain't my dad. This guy ain't my father. Don't get me wrong, because he was a good dad. But he wasn't my father because I ain't looked like him. Plus, I got treated differently. They went to college. Didn't nobody ask me if I wanted to go to college. I was just as good as they was, if not better. Nobody wanted to ask me. I had to go out here and be a playground legend in the park some damn where. So getting nicknames like Slick Watts and all that, the little kids and some of the older kids knowing me as they grew up. I mean, that's cool and all, but it kind of was like I didn't never get what my brothers got. And they never look back and say, hey, why ain't you sending your girl to college? I had to go work at the bar where the pimps and the hoes and the hookers and the gay people was and the robbers and all them. And I fit right in. Sure did. And they weren't mad at me till I started stealing everything. My mom said, you ain't getting paid. Take the money. I did what mom said to do. I took the money. I mean, I spent time in jail because my dad didn't go for that. He was a hardworking man. He had a fifth grade education. You know what I mean? He worked hard. I ain't saying he didn't. He gave me a work ethic that was impeccable. But damn, that's all I learned how to do. That and lie to women, you gotta have more than one. You got to have one to sub the other. You got to have this. You don't worry about feelings. You just get in and get out. All that bull crap. Because that's what it was. And medicating the feelings along the way. So when I'm hurt, the first thing I know how to do is go get a woman and get some alcohol and other things to like go along with that and party. So once I got here, man, and that first step kicked in. And I wrote the first step, right? And I couldn't spell good. I couldn't comprehend and I couldn't retain information. So that's not a good look for an addict like me. So I was embarrassed. It was a few things I was, but having a loving and caring sponsor, he helped me. Because he said, listen, when you write them steps, ain't nobody gonna read them but you. You know what you wrote down, whether you spelled it right or not. So he uplifted me with the things he said to me in order for me to get going. And then you dropped on me to get a dictionary. I said, oh, hell no. I ain't. John had to give me my first dictionary when I had like 15 years clean. I was holding out big time for that one. Share like Shakespeare. Don't even know what the hell some of the words I was sharing about. I ain't gonna lie. You know, used to lie. But now it's different if I would have took that. See, that was one of the suggestions I didn't take, is to get a dictionary. And it tells you right in the step working guide about getting a dictionary. But I wouldn't do it. So there was things that I wouldn't do till I got to a point of we was going to Philly to bury Skip, my sponsor, and we in a car going down the highway, and they say to me, hey, sponsor, we giving you a week to get a sponsor. I said, who's the sponsor? They said, you got a week to get a sponsor. And by the way, got a dictionary for you. I didn't think that was fair, but this wasn't about being fair. So I did get another sponsor. It didn't work out. I got another sponsor. It didn't work out for whatever reason. You get these sponsors, and listen, when you sit down, here's the thing that you got to understand about the steps. They're really simple. And when I try to keep them simple, I complicate it by trying to ask all these questions that I really don't have the answer. I don't. So when I did the first step and I went over it, I started to understand. So my sponsor said, okay, step's done. Now go live it. Start to identify and remember the things that you remember you was powerless over about them two babies, mamas, and that wife you got. Because, you know, I had a whole lot of stuff coming at me. I got a 46-year-old son, and I told you my 27 just got murdered. I got a 30-year-old daughter and a 40-year-old son that's really got mental health issues. And they gave him a legal permit for a gun and didn't even check how many medications he was on. He and high-hiring all the time. You don't know what the hell's wrong with that boy. But they told him when he was coming through school that he would never be nothing. He was in special ed. That he never was going to be able to drive a car. That he was never going to be able to go to school. None of that stuff. He was never going to be able to graduate. The boy graduated. He got a car. He been in college, you know, because being here with us and helping, when we help each other, we can get some better results than people that really don't know about this. So I was in the field, and I knew about some medicines, and I went to the psychiatrist. And I'm just, you know, I'm observing. You don't know I know anything, but I'm just sitting there, and my son, he's giving me questions. Alan, are you hearing voices? So Alan look at me and look at the psychiatrist. Alan look at me and he look at the psychiatrist. He looked back to the psychiatrist and said, yeah, I'm hearing voices. I said, you a goddamn liar. Only voices you hearing is me and Rita downstairs. And he started laughing like y'all laughing. So I knew he was lying. See, some of this mental health stuff that we got going on is a crock to me. It's an excuse not to work on myself. Hell, we all, if you think about it, half or all of us in there should have been on some damn medication. Now you get it and you get money for it. They get money for it. You all messed up. You go into a meeting. They talk about, yeah, dual diagnosis. And I forget all them words that we used to say. I know what I said to my sponsor one time. He said, I'm cross addicted. He said, how you get them crosses in that pipe, Gerald? He said, did you crush them? And he said, you know, we come in here talking about we poly addicted. Excuse my language, but he said, I ain't never got hit high with no bitch named Polly. He would make jokes out of stuff, make me feel bad too. I'd be like, I ain't never saying that again. But that's what we learn around here, man. So the first step ran me over to the second step once I started to identify times when I would think before I react and try to deal with things appropriately. See, I didn't even understand. I never even knew about the word appropriate till I got here. So said you can either react or respond. Respond is the word I never heard. It's respond. So I would be in situations like domestic relations, knowing I ain't got no power, but you know how we still want to get tongue tied down there and try to tell them people what they should do. And they telling us what to do. But I stopped doing that. I stopped wasting a lot of energy on things that I ain't have power over. And my life felt better. The unmanageability I could see was disappearing in my life. Just like today, if somebody called and I really don't want to talk to, you don't got to answer the phone. You don't want to talk to them, don't answer the phone. But if you answer the phone, you're going to get everything that comes through the phone. I guess so. I just started laughing like, she keeps calling. I said, why do you keep answering? You have the power not to answer. But if you want to answer, maybe you want that unmanageability to be building up in your life so that we can react in a way that turns into physical at the end. And I don't know if you know what I mean, because I was running with the kind of girls that got physical with me. I guess they said, oh, I'll tear that little short ass up. And I ain't big on hitting no women, but I give you a body shot, you leave me alone. I can't, listen. I mean, one girl was in the Army, one was in the Marines, one was from the streets of Baltimore, and they all could fight. And listen, I had enough when I was out in active addiction. I did not deserve, just because I wouldn't give you money after you already spent all that money, you want the money I got, and you're going to beat me up for it? Oh, no. I came into recovery not to be no sucker, although sometimes I am, but it got me to identify with the powerless part, the unmanageability part, the surrender part. We talk about surrender to win. So when I surrender, I win. Because, you know, when I got to the point where y'all taught me how to say no, I can say no in nice ways. Or I can say them in not so nice ways. Because I say no. Kids would ask for money. No. Especially my oldest ones that guilted me in the beginning for about a couple years. They guilted me like, you ain't never did. Now, they ain't cuss at me. But they, you know, it was like cussing at you. You ain't never did nothing. You all these years, because my oldest boy 46 and his brother is 40, so they seen me in active addiction. They get the drag up the driveway stuff when they was cutting up. I would drag them up the driveway and beat that butt, their ass, or whatever. The two youngest ones didn't get none of that. And that's what my oldest one would say. He's like, Dad, you real nice and recovering now. Why weren't you doing that when we was growing up? And I was like, son, I was not there. I wasn't. And now I'm just helping. I'm being guided by a sponsor that teach me about somebody doing that to me or wasting energy. You know, because I say I came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I got to look at that. When I wrote that, am I really believing that? So one of the things about being here is even if you don't go through the steps or apply the steps, the first thing you learn is when you come through the door, you surrendering. The second thing is you done came to believe because you done stayed up in here. And the third step about making a decision, you done made a decision to stay. So that's one, two, and three in another way. I get tired of telling people, I mean, listening to people talk about who don't do the steps, who don't know the steps and all that. When the book tell you from the first day you get here, the steps become part of your life. The first day. Don't say you got to be here and you ain't been doing no steps and you just been doing what you want to do and all that. If you're still making meetings, if you're still talking to your sponsor, not saying there's more to it than that, but I want to let you know what you are doing. Not coming here and downgrade you about what I think you ain't doing. That ain't teaching nobody. That's judging and degrading them. And I don't do that. I don't do that. Hopefully my sponsees don't do that because I see them after the meeting. I say, yeah, come here. Let me talk to you, man. They be like, and sometimes, most of the times when I do that, I would have something to reprimand them about. But it wasn't all the times, but all the times I would go, come here, man. Let me talk to you. They be, damn, what I done said wrong now? And I'd be like, man, you did a good job, man. You really killed that, man. I love you, man. And I mean that. And I want you to keep getting better and keep working on yourself. Because that's how you get where you get when it comes to this disease of addiction. Because let me tell you something. You can play with this disease if you want. But hopefully you watching the people that's around you die, staying out there. I got friends that wouldn't come in here. And when they did come in here, they didn't stay. And they was trying to get me to go with them. I said, I'm not going with y'all. This ain't, we ain't hooping. We ain't playing for no championships. That's over. I'm trying to live and I'm trying to recover from the disease of addiction. I really like to thank all y'all, man, for even staying around. You know, it's my daughter now. They check on me now. Because one of the things I didn't tell you is in July 8th, I was in a tractor trailer accident. And I don't want to make excuses for what I did, but my dumb ass ran into a low bridge. 23 years, one accident. You know, and a lot of times when I hear, you know, people, you know, equating stuff to God, it's fine because that's where they are. And they're allowed to do that. But when you start getting the you version on what you need to be doing, you know, because I'm doing it, then that's a no-no to me. So a friend of mine told me, when you hear somebody with the you version, you better get away from them. Because they telling you what to do instead of what they should be doing. See, them little things really mean something to an addict like me. Because I need you to give it to me plain and simple. I don't need all that dynamic duo stuff that might come out of people's mouth when they talked about how I was talking to God. Because I'd be like, well, where'd you meet him at? What? Because is he coming back? Because if he is, let me know. I want to meet him too. You know, I get sarcastic, which I shouldn't, which is wrong. But I kind of like, the God I believe comes through y'all. That's all I'm going to say. Comes through y'all. And it comes to y'all in a various ways of what this fellowship has given me and how it has brought me back to life, even in the midst of all the things that have been done to me. Told y'all about my wife. I was in an accident, so I got a concussion, got disc problems in my neck, and a double back problem, because I already was on workman's comp with my back. I fell at work, but I didn't stop working. I kept working while I was on workman's comp. I just wanted to go to the doctors, get the therapy, and get the medication, right? But then in the midst of that, I got into this accident. So I'm on two workman's comp with a job that's probably going to fire me anyway. I would fire me. And I'm the oldest guy there. I'm 66 years old. And they giving me jobs and stuff to do that 18, 20, 25, 30 should be doing. But it's like, they want me to react so they can fire me. Wasn't going to happen. Y'all got me skewed. It wasn't going to happen. One day I reacted on the dispatcher so bad that I was telling him, you treat me different than a people. No, we ain't. Well, how come I'm 60-something years old and I'm still out there jumping up and down up in the back of trailers? Well, you know the stuff to do. Well, somebody else knows what to do, too. Why you just singling me out? And after that, you know what I said? I said, see, you reacted. Don't you teach. Don't react. Respond. So after that, I ain't say nothing. Back hurting. Medicine ain't working. Getting epidurals in my back. Last for about a month. Still just working, because guess what? As much pain as we went through, that's one of the things that we can do. Go through pain. Work with the pain. They wonder why I wasn't saying nothing now. I wasn't complaining about nothing. Send me wherever you want to send me. I'm Gopher. Yeah, he on vacation. Give it to me. Yeah, he on vacation. Give it to me. Go send me over there. Send me over there. Send me up there because I'm local anyway. And then what I do is I do my own thing, even though they was like, well, you was over here too long or you was over there too long. And I said, oh, was I? But I wasn't nasty. I ain't react. That come from y'all, man. That come from a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. Third step talks about making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand him. Not turn it over to God. Don't say that. Too many times I hear that. To care of the God of my understanding, which is loving. Second step says, loving, caring, and greater than myself. Basic text. See, a lot of this stuff, I ain't just going to quote and say to you, I'll tell you where it is. And you can make your own determinations, or you can read it yourself and get whatever kind of interpretation you want to get out of it. Because I ask questions. That 33 years is just clean time. Just clean time. And I understand and I like that clean time. But I gotta know. When you get up here and say something, I might come up, and a lot of people would be like on guard when I'm coming. They're like, oh shit, here come Gerald. Like I'm some damn body. That's what they would do. And they got more clean time. They know more about this and more about that. All I want to know is, what did that word mean that you said? Because I don't know what that means. And as soon as they tell me what it means, I said, thank you. But they looking at me like I'm raid. I walk into the room and all y'all just scatter. That's how it is when I go to meetings now. And listen, it's okay. I don't take no credit for none of that. What I do is I keep coming. And I keep putting one foot in front of the other. I keep allowing that decision to be made. And I keep coming in here and believing that the care of the God that I understand as loving and caring and greater than myself is all you have to give me. That's all you got to give me. That's all you got to tell me. In the basic text, it talks about we are each other's eyes and ears. But as soon as we say something to each other, we want to react on you. Are we each other's eyes and ears? When I see you doing wrong, can I say something to you? I know we used to call it a pull-up. And you can call it a pull-up if you want. Because guess what? If somebody coming over to you to say something about what you're doing, they might save your life with what they telling you. Say, man, don't go home and do that, man. Don't tell her that, man. Don't put fuel on the fire, man. And all the time while we said it, I'm like, man, heck with that dude, man. I'm going right home and give it to her or give it to him. And then as soon as you give it to him and it ain't even like it was or we thought it was, then we want to be all sensitive. Oh, I'm sorry. We want to do a 10th step when we wrong, properly admit it. We don't even want to think about it. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought this or I thought that. We ain't in a fellowship that you thinking like that. We want to think you know what's going on because you read the literature that we read. Woo! Having fun. Ninth step. In the ninth step, this is what it says. It says, we start thinking of our past experiences. We start thinking of our past, specifically our addiction, as a gold mine of information to share with people we're trying to help in recovery instead of a period of darkness we want to forget about. No, people say they don't want to be going back into their past. They don't want to be doing this. I just want to move on. Well, in order to get free from the past, you got to go back to it. And that's what the steps help do. Because I told you, I had this nagging feeling about my dad that he wasn't my father. And I found out, not through my mother and my dad, because they took that shit to the grave. But then people came to my house one day talking about they was my brothers and sisters. Knocked on the door, talking about, I'm your sister, I'm your brother, I'm your uncle. And I look like them. But all I wanted to know was, because my aunt from Pittsburgh, right? I thought my mom moved here before my aunt did. My aunt moved here before my mom did. So when my aunt moved here, my dad and her worked at a golf course, and then my mom came, and she was already pregnant with me. When she got here, she hooked up with my dad through my aunt. So I'm in Pittsburgh one day, and one of my cousins was in the hospital, and she had something going on with her brain. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I wanted to see my cousin, one of my favorite cousins, right? He used to come up the road like I used to come down the road, you know, for different reasons. They came up the road for the good stuff. They set me down here in Pittsburgh for the bad stuff. But anyway, I got there and my aunt was there. So I said, before my aunt leave, I'm going to ask her, does she know who my dad is? So we went into one of them rooms like they take you and ask you about, you know, tell you about stuff, you know what I mean? And I walked in the room. And she walked in the room, and before I could even open up your mouth, she said, I don't know who your dad is, but it ain't him. I said, what? I ain't even asked her a question. Now, you can connect that any way you want to. Because some would say, well, that was God, it was God, or it was God, and whatever. I took it like, she was seeing me on the edge, and she gave me some information. So then, like I told you, one day I'm home watching the Lakers, you know, my team, and I get a knock at the door, and my wife answers the door, and she said, you got some people down here. I said, I got some people down here. Who are they? Who are they? Don't be letting people in the house. You don't know who they are. The one knew me from the street. She said, it's Kim, your sister. I said, my sister? Then the other one, Carol, said, your sister. For some way, they see my son going to a out-of-town bus trip with my dad and his wife. The girl seen my son. My son looked like my twin, my oldest son. You look at us, we could be brothers. We look like that close. So the lady said, she said to my son, you look like you could be my son. What's your name? So he gave her name. My name's Gerald W. Watt Jr. Okay. She wrote it down. Now guess where she worked at? The police station. She looked me up. And there I was. So she went into her detective mechanisms and start checking stuff out. And they figured, you know, that I was their sibling. They had heard about me, but they never knew where I was. And they and as funny as it is, the man had a whole family over here, had a kid to my mother and a kid to the lady upstairs that's my aunt's best friend that we never knew about. And I even asked her when she was at my aunt's funeral in Pittsburgh, do you know who my dad is? She went to the grave with it too. Now, the moral of the story is, I don't care who's my brothers and sisters. I just wanted this nagging feeling that's been going on in my mind and in my spirit for 30 years to go away. Because I figured that he wasn't my dad. I'm light-skinned and got a head full of hair. Everybody dark-skinned and ain't got no hair like him. So that's where I left it, because my wife was like, well, we going on Ancestry and do all. I said, you can go on Ancestry. I don't want nothing. It's the book. The book is closed to me. Now, they still call me. When my son died, I got murdered. They was there, you know, sister and brother and all that. But to me, until we take a blood test, it's just where I'm at. And nobody never took no blood test with me. You know, if you want me to be your brother or your sister, okay, I got plenty of brothers and sisters right here. You know what I'm saying? You want to be my brother or sister? You join in. You might not like me once you get to know me. Because I've been to a couple of their cookouts, and they definitely looking at me like, they ain't our brother. They over there drinking and smoking, and I ain't joining in, giving nothing away. You know what I mean? Because that's my nature anyway, is being a good people pleaser. You know, give you all my money and don't have no money. And you eating steak while I'm eating a hot dog. Defect. That's a defect. We find that stuff out. But long as I understand that I'm in the care of, and that I can continue to be in the care of, each and every time a situation comes up, I can think about this stuff and have it in my spirit to recognize. See, these steps are supposed to be for me to recognize things like character defects, like confrontation is a defect of mine. I love confrontation. We can get into some debates about literature and service work and all that kind of stuff. But then I got to understand that it was a defect. And that it wasn't nothing nice. I got stuff blowing out my neck talking about you wrong and the literature right here and it says that and it does that. And I'm all unmanageable with my feelings. And you, she's standing there going, you wrong. So I had to get to that point when I'm writing about stuff that I write about me and tell the truth so I can get the help that I need. Or I asked some people in my support group or anybody that I met that can help me with something that they've gone through when I listen to them share. And that's why it's so important to come to a meeting and be there early and leave late. And not get my phone and sit down and recover on my phone. All day, all night, y'all be doing that. And that's y'all. I'm calling you out. Because all that, you might miss something that somebody said to help save your life. You know? All right, I'll shut her down. You know, I love this. This is fun. One more thing, one more piece of information I'm going to give you. See, you really don't know how much these books can help you if you don't read them. You might say, oh, well, yeah, the steps. But the traditions and the concepts are just as important as the steps. It's important to have the steps to help me when I'm acting as a trusted servant in service. But let me give you this little bit of piece of advice. It's from the guiding principle, spirit of our tradition. You ain't got these books, man. You need to get them. They gold. and you're only hurting yourself. On page 200 is an example, says respect. It says respect is a particular challenge and principle for many of us. All right. Practicing this principle doesn't necessarily mean that others respect us. It means we offer respect. We offer others respect we wish for ourselves. Let me read that again. Respect is a particular challenging principle for many of us. Practicing this principle doesn't necessarily mean that others respect us. It means we offer others the respect we wish for ourselves and that we respect ourselves enough to walk in dignity and quiet strength. That might not mean much to y'all. Those of y'all that read the literature and all that, it means something to you because it's a different kind of respect or understanding. But everybody can understand it. It says, we earn the respect of others by being respectful and reciprocal ourselves by standing on the merits of our program and by resisting the impulse to brag or boast, to defend or argue. We can explain who and what we are without clarity, simplicity, and serenity. We no longer need to sacrifice our self-respect for approval. Our actions and demeanor show our respect for ourselves and our program. Anonymity is a key principle in our practice of respect. We each set aside our desire for recognition or approval or by desire to hide and stand together in dignity. I missed the whole damn sentence. It says, where is it? We don't fight for respect, we demonstrate it. So stuff like that, listen, this book ain't that old. It's a couple years old, but it's not that old. And you know, one of the things about me is I got one phone line home group and I got one face-to-face home group. Phone line home group I've been on for 14 years. And I got involved when they started phone line meetings about 17 years ago, just long before the pandemic and all that viral, what's the meetings called? Virtual. Whatever, fake, whatever. Where you can see people and all that, right? Personally, I don't do that. I might do it if somebody asks me to share, but I really don't get on that. But the phone line meeting that I'm on, we do literature every day. So I like literature. And we read literature every day. So just to get on there and listen would help me. Because some days I don't got to say nothing. I just listen. Today we had IP. We had the group IP. It talks about members that will come long distance to help in the area or whatever. It talks about that kind of stuff. All this stuff that we be doing, it comes to light through our literature. But if you don't read it, you won't know it's there. So listen, I challenge y'all to get busy. And I tell you, after you do it, I guarantee, it is our guarantee that it'll help you stay clean and grow spiritually. You know, we talk about an addict and alone is in bad company. We talk about getting away from principles over personalities. We talk about all this backbiting and bickering for little stuff that's gone. If you stop doing it, it won't do you. I'm going to say that again. If we don't stop doing it, it won't do you. So get serious about your recovery. Don't just show up to a speaker jam and sit here in the back or whatever and say, oh, here he goes with that book stuff. And here he goes, he's preaching and all that kind of stuff. No, I ain't. I'm giving you my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm not saying to you, Virgin, I'm not telling you. I'm telling you my experience being dumb as a rock. And some days I'm still dumb as a rock. But if I sit here and I listen and I pay attention and I ask you what you meant when you shared that, I don't care how much time you got. Because people look at me like I'm crazy when I come ask them a question. They're like, don't you got 33 years? And? There's always room for growth. So listen, I'm an addict named Gerald. It works if you work it. It works if you don't work it. It just won't be working for you. Thanks for allowing me to share.
I'd like to thank Gerald for sharing his experience, strength, and hope. It's good to hear from you, man. It's been a while. Will someone please read We Do Recover?
My name's Johnny, I'm at it. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. There is this left to do. There seems to be this alternative. Either going the best we can, the better end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. And just going by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicts today are more fortunate. For the first time in the entire history, a simple way has improved itself in lives of many addicts is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual 9 month program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, Johnny. Great.
Hey, Dave. Will you help us close the meeting, please?
Can we have a moment of silence for the still suffering addicts outside these walls? Worldwide, may not know where they are, but I'm glad to be very much ready for it. Who woke us up?
God. Grace is with me. Things things we cannot change. Courage to change the things we can. And the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Amen.